I mentioned that Dr. Cook, Stephen Cook, will be joining us. Well, guess what? He has joined us. He is the professor of environmental science and biology at Carleton University in Ottawa and an avid angler. Not that that is important, but I think it's important.
It is important.
Good morning, Stephen. How are you?
I'm well, thanks. How are you doing?
Doing great, man. So first of all, this is fascinating. I don't know whose idea it was, yours or John's or whoever, to talk about this particular subject. I find it rather interesting. I don't think we've ever talked about this on this program before. I mentioned to the audience that, you know, science always comes up in our discussions as it applies to marine wildlife management, right? We're always saying, yeah, well, where's the science? You know, we need science. Give us science. And then we can make decisions, intelligent decisions based on science. And science, much like, I don't know, a doctor, you kind of put your whole trust in that, right? If science says that, then it's got to be right. And we may have a different opinion after this segment. I don't know. But first of all, have you been out fishing this summer?
Of course, yeah. My kids are my crack research team. I got three kids under the age of 9, and we've been catching bass like crazy. But what's cool is you can learn so much from children. I'm always in the front of the boat, you know, chucking the big adult baits with treble hooks and so on. And, you know, the kids are in the back with 1/32 ounce jigs, and they're hammering the fish. So one of the things I've certainly learned this summer is go small when the bite is tough. And I'm just trying to keep up with them.
Great way to learn. You want to learn, surround yourself with kids and a wife or two, and yep. You're going to learn how to fish. I've always said that. I've maintained that. good for you. It has been an extraordinarily, I think, anyways, just from my buddies who've been reporting back to me, it's been a really good year for bass, hasn't it?
It has, but I would also say a different year. Yes. I spent a lot of time on the Rideau system, and things were certainly odd in the spring. It was bass run their nests well into mid-June here, a couple weeks later than normal. I never got a really decent frog bite, but I know others did. It's been an odd one, but I've figured the fish out, thanks to my kids.
So you published this paper on your website called Science Benefits from Robust Evidence, Irrespective of Speed. Tell us about this paper.
Sure. So the idea came actually from a tweet. So I'm active on Twitter, and I certainly get a lot of ideas on there. And a colleague elsewhere tweeted that there are just too many studies coming out far too quickly on the effects of microplastics on the aquatic environment. And I started thinking about it, and to me it has, and what he was arguing about was speed, that science should be done very slowly. And what I care about is the quality of science, and good science can be done quickly, and good science can be done slowly. At the end of the day, we want a really strong, robust evidence base to make decisions.
I always thought science was based on fact. I thought science was black and white. I thought there was no gray area in science.
Oh boy, yeah. as soon as you start talking about ecology and the natural world and lakes and rivers and fish, there's a lot of complexity. And so science is imperfect, and I know that that's something that people don't want to hear and something that scientists certainly don't like to talk about, but it's the truth. That is a truth. I think one of the realities is that I can go out and do a study on Big Rideau Lake and study smallmouth bass and maybe ask the question, you know, if fish are displaced in the context of a tournament, you know, do they return back to home? And so I could publish that work, and somebody could say, well, that's a definitive piece on it. But the reality is that we did it, you know, we likely did it in a single year. How we caught those animals could influence the, you know, did we simulate a tournament or did we use a real tournament? Was it a warm year or a cool year? Does it apply to rivers? Does it apply to larger lakes? does it, is it relevant that the fish were released at Rideau Ferry, which is a narrow area at one extreme end of the system? So there's all these factors that can influence the extent to which the trends or findings from a given study can be applied more broadly.
Okay, so they are facts, but they're based on that particular circumstance. We can't just take a wide brush and just say, well, that's the definitive work on releasing smallmouth.
Exactly. And so what we like to do is to actually see similar studies. Not any study can ever be exactly the same, but we like to see replication. And then we start to understand patterns, at least in the context of ecology, across different systems, across different geographies. And so you look at those big signals, if you've got 20 studies on a topic, what do they say overall? I could go to the literature and cherry pick the one study that says, hey, putting fish through a hydropower turbine is good for them, whereas the 19 others say it's actually really not very good for them. So cherry picking is certainly something that can be done and is done and that we try and fight against. But it's creating this big evidence base to work from. And a really good example is something like the Canadian Food Guide. You know how they're always taking that pyramid and flipping it upside down and changing the shape and so on? That's because the evidence base has changed through time. As new science comes out, they go back, they revisit it, and they update it. Same in the medical world. When you walk into your physician's office, they're working from a common playbook, and that playbook is updated, and it's all about reviewing what we know. And even when one new study comes out, it's the MS example, multiple sclerosis example with vein liberation therapy a few years ago, that was touted as the cure, if you will, and since then it's been discredited, and that was one early study that had some good success, and since then it hasn't been able to be replicated in clinical studies. So that's why relying on one study is always a little bit dangerous.
What do we do as consumers then?
What you're looking for is scientists that act as what I call honest brokers, so that are willing to not only talk about the science that they've done and what it means, but also, what are the limitations? What are the caveats? What are the uncertainties? As a scientist, I'm frequently asked to comment on things, and I try to be very clear when I'm letting the science and the evidence speak versus when I'm providing my own opinion and essentially advocating for a position. So that's part of it, too, just being clear when there's certainty in the science or when we're just providing our own opinion.
Wow. You just changed my whole outlook on the science stuff. I'm telling you. I know what you're saying, though, Stephen, and I appreciate you sharing that with us. But you're right. You have to kind of look at the background and see if they're, if this is an opinion or it's a neutral test. But interesting. My friend, always a pleasure having you on the program, and great to hear that you had a wonderful summer, especially with the kids. That's important.
Thanks so much. We'll see you on the water.
We will. And where can folks get more information, by the way? Can they? Is there a website they can go to?
Sure. www.fecpl.ca. That's our lab website. We're based at Carleton University, and you can Google me by finding Google Stephen Cook and find me that way as well.
Stephen, thank you, my friend. We'll talk to you soon.
Ciao.
Dr. Stephen Cook, Professor of Environmental Science and Biology, Carleton University, Ottawa. There you go. He says, hey, not everything comes out of my mouth. It's a fact. Sometimes I throw some other stuff in there. Board Journal left this. So you dare go away.